Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. When Paul Galassi designs a page of comic book action, your eye blazes across each panel, compelled to continue to the end. Then your brain demands you stop and go back to look at each separate image in appreciation of the step-by-step process. From his seminal story runs on Shang-Chi and Batman to Slash Maraud, James Bond, Sci-Spy, and Catwoman, Galassi always delivers action-adventure with a healthy dose of fantasy women, cool weapons, and the vehicles boys have wanted to own since their first model kits. We'll talk about collaborations with writers like longtime partner Doug Mensch, Don McGregor, the co-creator of Saber, and guys like Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, who together with Galassi just released the Punisher Bloody Valentine one-shot from Marvel. Our conversation begins with Paul's story of how he broke into the business at the age of 17.
Is it fair to say that working for Dan Atkins was the start of your career?
He was the first guy I met through another fellow comic book artist named Val Mayerick. I met his girlfriend on a bus going from Pittsburgh, the Art Institute of Pittsburgh that I attended. Got into what she did for a living and her being a student, and I was a student at this art school, and she asked me what I would like to do with my career one day. I said, I thought about doing comics. She says, my boyfriend does that. Where does he live? And she says, he lives in Youngstown. And this was a shock because I thought anybody worked for in the comic industry, let alone Marvel, which he did, had to live in the vicinity of New York City. And this is like the first time I found out the world of freelancing. You don't have to be there. And so she introduced me to him a week later, and I met him at a dojo. He was teaching martial arts. We developed a very quick friendship. He was a great guy and still is a friend of mine. He let me know that Dan Atkins was also a fellow Ohio guy, along with Craig Russell, and this is all, like, shocking. So he hooked me up with Atkins shortly afterwards, and I was aware of Atkins because he had inked Steranko. So this was like coming to meet one of my big heroes, this guy. And met Dan, and he kind of showed me what the pitfalls, what to look for, what not to look for, beware this, beware that. He tutored Val, and Val and Craig were his understudies, those two guys, and then I came in. I was the third guy to come in there. So when I got the call from he was the one who said, look, here's what you got to do. You got to work up a 6-page short story with no dialogue, and they want to see how I draw, the drawing style, the technique, and then my storytelling abilities. No dialogue. And I worked up this 6-page short story one night, and he gave it to Dan, and he submitted it to Roy Thomas, and that's when the ball started rolling.
Wow, and your first job was a Mobius story, right?
Yep. And I was still in art school when I was doing that.
That's amazing.
I had a year to go in art school.
Yeah, that's really incredible. So would you say, and you mentioned Steranko, and I know, again, in previous interviews, you've said that he was really the first guy that, like, knocked you out.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of guys who, like, were hitting me pretty good. But
who else?
Steranko put me to the canvas. And I was, I can't remember a dude who wrote that drew a Torak. This is going way back. I started with, like, Peanuts.
Sure.
Charlie Brown and, Charles Schultz stuff and then Dennis the Menace. When I was a real young kid.
Sure.
My mother worked at a drugstore, so she'd bring these comic books home for me. So it was Torak and Dal Comics, and then, but the guy that really blew my mind was Joe Kubert.
Okay, yeah, with Sergeant Rock?
Yeah. So this was like 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. I'm getting a little older, and now my tastes are leaning towards James Bond and going to the films and all that sort of thing. And the only comic that was leaning in that direction was Steranko's Nick Fury. And I came across that, if you recall, back in the day, these little mom-and-pop like grocery stores would have these cellophane-wrapped comics without the covers on them. One issue of something, a Marvel book in the front, and you flipped it off in the back. It could be another, like a Dell comic, a Gold Key comic, with the covers gone. And it was the one I caught one day that caught my eye was Nick Fury, the Yellow Claw series.
Oh, sure.
It blew my mind. I bought that thing, and then I had to, like, really scramble to get all the rest of the issues. And then that was that was it from that day on. Man.
That's really cool. And I grew up in that same era, too, man, of the dime stores and the spinner racks. And, yeah, I guess, those were the comic books they were supposed to send back.
Exactly.
And, instead they were backing them and selling them to us. So that's cool.
That's so cheap, like, what, 10 cents?
Something like that, yeah.
It really like nothing.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's hilarious. All right, so you do the one issue of Mobius, and then boom, the next issue, Master of Kung Fu.
There was a period before I got into the Kung Fu after the Mobius issue, and there was a lot of black and white. They were setting me up and deciding where to shuffle things around in Marvel and where to put me. That's when I was doing, like, the Tomb of Dracula and these black and white magazines. So I was just honing my craft with that sort of thing and just biding my time. And then I got the call that from Roy that they're going to move Jim Starlin off Kung Fu and throw me on it.
You say you really had to start with that first six-page story to show what kind of level your storytelling was at. Were you just really learning from the comic books that you read? Was it, you know, admiring the various artists? Was it mostly from Dan's pointers and things? How would you say your style kind of developed?
Totally by itself. I would get the script, read it, and either you could visualize the stuff in your head or you can't, or you're gonna stumble around with it and
sure.
Pull your hair out and not have confidence, or you're going to be able to go on the attack. If I look back, I can see all the early mistakes.
Okay.
But it was a fluidity to it,
sure.
I felt, you know. And I didn't have any fear. You can't not have confidence. You're going to have it when you're a rookie and stumble around, but you got to grab the reins and go for it, man.
Sure.
If you want this stuff as bad as I wanted it, or anybody else that loves this medium, you're going to focus.
Would you say that were you looking at films? Were there films that you were looking
not,
at in terms
not,
of
well,
developing your style?
Like anybody else. I grew up on TV and films. And to this day, it's still the biggest influence is probably the TV box, man. You know, post all kind of different variations and avenues you could take in storytelling. That's stuck with my brain the most, that imagery. And I think Kirby admitted that, too. But that's why so many of his pages were broken into square, the same-size panels, the six-panel classic page, is because it's reminiscent of a TV screen.
Were there any type of specific genres of films? I mean, obviously, this was at the height of the spy period, and we see a lot of that in a lot of your stories, but were there any other genres that really attracted you in terms of storytelling?
Star Trek.
Oh, there you go.
That's
the original. That's cool.
Yeah.
No, that's cool, man. You're a product of your generation. I mean,
sure,
that's
man.
That's excellent.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. I had this, like, the rickety old black and white TV with, like, lousy contrast. So that's where you go with the shadows.
Well, that worked perfect for you. There
well,
you
right
go.
To the end grams of my dump.
That's awesome. Now, I want to ask about Master of Kung Fu, because you and Doug Mensch, you guys had this amazing run, and you really picked up from where Englehart and Starlin started and went into a really interesting direction that not only had great spy stuff, great martial arts, but there was a lot of humor in, I think, characterization. Because you had, am I right in remembering that Groucho Marx was a recurring character in Master of Kung Fu? Did you have him as a cab driver or something?
That was the other guy.
Oh, maybe that was Starlin. Okay, well, I know
not
you had
Starlin, somebody else.
Oh, okay. Well, I know you had Brando.
Yep.
Okay, so there you go. Was it just like, oh, what the hell? I mean, it's pop culture. Let's throw these guys in. Clive Reston obviously was kind of, I guess, referenced as the son of James Bond in a veiled sort of way, but he certainly looked a lot like Connery.
Yep. That was the intention.
That's really cool.
Yep. It was like a tribute to those people.
Yeah.
It was a big salute.
Is there a rights issue regarding reprinting some of your guys' classic run because of the Fu Manchu connection and the Sax Rohmer people?
That's it, Tom. Especially with in the position that Marvel's in right now. They got to watch their P's and Q's financially. So I doubt if they're going to want to spring for something like that, especially if the Rohmer estate asks for a bundle.
No, I understand.
They're going to back off right away.
Well, could they retcon him into being the son of somebody like the Yellow Claw or somebody like that?
Yeah, they could do that. They could change the name of Fu Manchu to some other name
sure.
If they want to do that. It could be done.
And I noticed you guys had the character in your Max series when you brought him back in 2000.
Yep.
And you know, avoided actually naming him, but there he was.
He was there.
Yeah.
Everybody knew who he was.
Sure.
If you followed the series.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And how well did that do?
Good enough.
Okay, I was disappointed that more didn't come afterwards.
So was I.
Man, well, we got to petition Joe Q then and make sure that we get more of that, man.
I love it. I love it.
That would be great.
It sold well. It did well.
Yeah, it was.
But everything is a one shot thing these days.
Really?
I think even if something does terrific, they're still gonna and they got another idea. Somebody says, "Hey, let's try this. Let's go in this direction." They'll let that other thing go and then go in that direction.
You've done so many projects with Doug Mensch. How many of them start with Doug saying, hey, I've got an idea, or how many start with you saying, hey, how about this?
It worked both ways.
Did Batman come immediately after Master of Kung Fu? I know you had a couple gigs with other guys in between, but was
yes.
that your next work with Doug?
There was Kung Fu, then there was I worked on Saber.
Yes, and I do want to ask about Saber. That's a landmark book, man. Well, they call it the first direct market graphic novel.
One of them. Starenko, I think, had the first one. Because there's a big argument. Jim Starlin claimed that he had it with Captain Marvel, and then Will Eisner with his thing.
Yes.
But if you look at it, I think Starenko could be right when he makes that claim that he had the first one with the Chandler book.
Yes, Red
that
Top.
That was like 74.
Oh, I remember that. Absolutely. Yeah, that was with Byron Price.
That's right.
Yeah, that was a neat little book.
Yeah, if you look at it as a graphic, you by that definition, that term, it truly was.
Sure.
It was a little novel with drawings in it. You know,
yeah, it was a
little novel. Well, he wrote it, too. Yeah, so Sabre was like one of the first.
And much like Shang-Chi looking a bit like Bruce Lee after a while, you know, Sabre, who would have thought to make Jimi Hendrix a superhero? I like it. I like it. And I'm not trying to get you any type of litigation or anything like that.
Cool.
But it was just this great image of a guy, and it just worked. And and reading interviews, it sounded like you and Don kind of fought back and forth in terms of the direction of the story.
Yeah, well, the direction of the look of the guy, because he had this, like, flamboyant, like, basil Rathbone kind of guy.
No kidding.
The swashbuckling guy with the hat, with the big plume feather, and you know, all that gear that those guys wore in those movies.
Wow.
The Errol Flynn flicks.
Sure, sure.
And I didn't see, I really didn't perceive Sabre being that way. I couldn't see it. I guess I took the reins on the visuals of how he looked. And you know, I was looking at a Hendrix album. On the back of it was Hendrix and the other guys with horses, and he had this scarf tied around his head and this gun belt over his shoulder, and they were holding pistols. And right away, I said, that's the look. That's what we want. And then I piled on more guns, man. More and more knives, guns, the whole thing.
No, that's a hallmark, man.
I mean, don't mess with him.
No, absolutely.
Stolen in town. Look out.
What a great book. Are you not working? I understand Desperado is doing a new version of Sabre. Are you involved with that?
No. I think it's the early Sabre. It's
okay.
The young Sabre.
I see.
I was in New York, and I dropped by the booth, and I saw Don. We chit-chatted, and it was good to reminisce and see an old friend.
Sure.
And I asked him about it. I saw a poster behind him. I said, what's the scoop? He said, we're going to do a... I don't even know if he's writing it.
I think he is.
Okay, well, so it's Sabre growing up.
You know, okay, so it's a prequel.
I wouldn't mind doing that guy again. He's fun.
I hope you guys get back together, man.
That'd be terrific.
I'm
you can do a lot with that whole scenario.
Oh, you bet.
Anything
no.
post-apocalyptic is a ball. You get free rein to do all kinds of things.
And that series, too, was kind of faded where, you know, things got funky with Eclipse and, you know, it was a pretty hot book. And then I guess, you know, there were some problems internally with Eclipse and we never saw it. You know, it just never finished in a lot of ways. So I'm glad it's coming back. And, yeah, I hope you come back to it as well as Don.
We'll see what happens, John. It'd be great. I want you to write it.
I'm all for it.
There you go.
I'm ready. You know,
I'll twist arms.
You know, and I was going to ask you about that because going to something like the Grackle, that sounded like it started with you for Acclaim, and you brought in Mike Barron. Is that fair to describe it that way?
Yeah, probably. I can't recall. I can't recall if I brought him in. I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how that was lined up. That could have been already. He might have beat me to the punch.
Okay.
Talking to the editors, and then he asked me to jump on board. He was fun to work with.
Well, and you guys had a mutual friend in Steve Rude, am I correct?
That's right.
And you guys met at Steve's wedding?
Yeah, for the first time I met him there, out here in Oregon, yeah.
And I had read that you had been aware of his work and were looking for some sort of project to work with him.
Yeah.
So Grackle turned out great. I came to it late. That's something I found in the back bins, and I'm glad I found it because it was just cool action and that was
right
fantastic.
Right up my alley. I love that stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then again, then you switch gears and you do something like Conan.
Cool Rock.
Well, both of them, actually, right?
Yeah, I did Conan. I was all over the place.
Yeah, well, that's...
It still am. There's nothing good about that.
Well, first of all, your look is very distinguishable, which is great, and I think you came through on something which is a 180 from something post-apocalyptic or something spy-oriented.
Back then, Doug and I would almost go out of our way to, like, buck the system on following the status quo by creating these ridiculous characters on our own and just doing something constantly offbeat. And keeping everybody, like, off kilter, like, what are they going to do next kind of thing. That was the intention. Whether that was good or bad, because you got Slash Marad in there, a character called Cold Blood with Marvel. We're always jumping around from Conan to Cold Blood, another post-apocalyptic character. And, you know, it was, and we had been asked to do some of the big characters. And we would always, like, buck the system and say no.
Rather create your own stuff.
We're just like these renegade dudes being idiots.
There's a consistency in some of them. You look at Sci Spy, and I think you can see a line between Master of Kung Fu, Sci Spy, The Grackle, and there is the Punisher thing that you just did with Jimmy Palmiotti. There
yeah.
is that kind of, you know, that espionage vein in there and stuff. But then,
right.
you know, you get things like Slash Marad, where that was very much of its time. I mean, there's a real 80s-looking kind of hero. It was post-apocalyptic, but it really had that kind of new wave fashion sensibility about it as well.
There you go, dude. You hit that one on the head. That one is where I thought, let's grab some of this imagery from MTV. That's when MTV was like at its highest peak. and incorporate that into the look of this comic. And right after, I think that's is when Lobo came around. He always reminded me of a big like rock and roll guitar player.
Oh, no question.
So, you know, all that gear and the punk rock look and all that stuff that was happening back then was in Slash Marad. That was the intention.
So you started off kind of at the feet of some of these great guys like Atkins and Steranko, and they kind of helped you along, and now you're the man. And you're working with younger writers, and I'm curious what it is like writing with a guy like Ed Brubaker, for example, on Catwoman.
He was terrific.
It was a good experience?
Every time I got the script, I was like blown away. He was great. His dialogue was impeccable.
He's an amazing
writer. I worked with him in a minute. He's great.
That's really cool.
Captain America, I'm a fan of the book.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
He's a guy that could be writing anything. You got some of these talents that should be writing film scripts, TV shows, Bendis and Rucka. These guys are very blessed, talented guys. They could do anything. They could call their own shots, in my opinion. But when they focus down on comics, that's when they shine. That's what they love, and you can see it come through. I loved working with Ed on Catwoman. It was great, man. I wish it would have went a little further.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was a good run.
It came up to a sudden halt one day with one phone call.
Well, and I know he jumped companies too, so maybe that had something to do with it as well.
The fact that he was leaving?
Yeah.
Well, they could have kept Jimmy and I on it, though. People wonder how that happened, just one phone call. But they hired us to bring the sales up, in which we did, but there was some political stuff going on back there. And it was just like that. One day, one phone call, we're taking guys off. See you around.
And as you said, you seem to think that it is more in terms of just one shots, like maybe one six-part story and that's it, or maybe 12 issues and that's it.
Well, I'm glad you told me. I didn't know that.
No, I'm just asking. Am I right? Is this what you're perceiving?
Yeah, man,
that's
the flavor. That's what's going on, which is very peculiar. I don't know why they do that, why they mix it up. Maybe there's so many people like pouring out of Joe Kubert's school. They got to make room for them to change everything. I don't know. Which is nothing wrong with that. But I don't know why it's like that. I couldn't tell you. I'd have to be behind closed doors. A fly on a wall.
I hear you. Are relations good with you and the two big companies?
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Because it would seem like you'd be the kind of guy that they should have, and you should be in demand in terms of your style and everything.
Sure.
It's a hot style. Here's another great thing you guys did.
But you got to remember, these books are scheduled way ahead. They plan and map the stuff out way ahead. So you could have Michelangelo looking for work. Doesn't mean that he's going to call up Marvel and DC and get the ball rolling in 2 weeks. You got to get in line.
So are they coming to you with projects, or are you coming to them with projects?
Both.
Okay.
Jimmy is my guy. He's my eyes and ears.
Okay.
And I do what I can on my end. There's a partnership with that.
Okay.
That's how that works these days with he and I. On top of him, he and I being tight, we're good friends. So we keep an eye out for each other.
Well, then I guess that explains the Punisher Valentine special.
Exactly.
Which was...
go ahead.
No, please. I was just going to say, a fantastic book. It's a great one-shot, and it put, as Jimmy said in my interview with him, the Punisher in kind of a James Bond scenario, but it was, you know, clearly how the Punisher would resolve something in a very different way than someone like Bond.
There you go. I agree with you. I agree with you. See, what happened there was I after the Master Kung Fu I had done with Marvel 3 or 4 years ago, mm-hmm. I severed ties with Marvel for a while and was doing a lot of work at DC, and I decided to give Axel Alonso, the editor on Master Kung Fu, a phone call. So I happened to call Axel just like 3 days before Jimmy had approached Axel with the script for me in mind.
Oh, wow.
So that's how it worked out, all as well that ends well.
Cool.
Just one of those things that lined up by itself. So, yeah, I agree with you. I would have taken Punisher if he was in Brooklyn. You know what I'm saying? He didn't have to give me... If I'm going to do Punisher, it doesn't mean Galassia has to have the spy motif thing.
No, I understand.
You know, I mean, it worked out that way, and it was fun doing that. I like Suspiria in that story.
No question. No.
And I just love the way they Justin and Jimmy played her as being of a European kind of descent, that Latin kind of flavor to her. The way she would think and react was very, to me, like 1950s Sophia Loren-ish. The way she read lines or it was just terrific. I loved it, man.
Well, and it was...
She was bossing him around the whole issue. It's like a true Italian woman.
It was a great story, and again, I think you guys hit that right PG-13 level where it was still sexy enough, but you guys were able to, you know, I guess conform yourselves to what Marvel is looking for these days, because it doesn't seem like outside of the regular Punisher comic book that they're doing much with the Max line these days.
Right.
Boy, it seemed like if you had a license to do the kind of stuff that you're capable of doing, it would be on a Max kind of book like that, where there's, you know, no encumbrances, and you could just do your thing.
Well, there's talk that they want me to do another one down the line. Possibly in the summer, maybe the fall.
Another Punisher?
Punisher, maybe, I think they want to throw it in and tie it in with the Civil War thing going on. So it's, it could be, actually, I saw him in New York again at this convention, and he mentioned Punisher versus Cyclops.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, one grenade, that's it. So.
Well, and again, that's what I loved about the Punisher story, because there was this very typical James Bond kind of scenario that I think Suspiria was planning, and things didn't go well, so boom, Punisher just cracks open the guns and says, we're getting in, that's it.
That's the way to solve it right away, baby.
Well, exactly. I like that. What about, I'm going to ask you about another crime writer from today, a guy like Brian Azzarello.
Yep. I'd love to work with him.
I would love to see you two guys together.
I love this Loveless thing, the Western.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Got to see you on some Westerns, man.
I'm doing Jonah Hex after I wrap up this JSA classified job.
That's wonderful, because that was where I was going with Jimmy and Justin doing Jonah Hex. I think you'd be great on that.
I said, Jimmy, you going to ink it? He said, no, I want you to do it.
That's cool. Now, yeah. Jimmy does a great job inking you. Are you lucky, and have you been finding guys these days that are doing a justice to your inking and stuff?
It's mostly been Jimmy the last several years.
Well, man. There you go.
Yeah. According to Amanda, Jimmy's in a corner in their little apartment.
Uh-huh.
With Paige is flying in the air. This guy's so fast. He's writing. He's on a phone. And Jimmy could draw, too, by the way.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
No, but he's doing justice to your stuff. I think that's great.
He sure does. It's great. I love it.
That's really cool. Well, I'm glad you guys are working.
I'm afraid to argue with him. He's a godfather. They don't play with him. I'm afraid to tell him anything.
Well, and another
He'll send the Punisher over here.
Now, does he, honestly, as the writer and anchor, does he have more, for a lack of better words, say in how a story is going to go? Like in something like the Punisher Valentine special, that script was already done.
You don't stray from what he was very succinct on what he wanted with that job. Every panel was what he wanted. The way you hold in your hands, that's Jimmy broke that thing down, which is cool. I love that.
Okay.
Because I have faith and respect for his judgment on things.
Sure.
Not always. I don't agree with everything up and down with Jimmy on things, especially when it comes to coloring and so forth. He sees another visual thing than I do sometimes. Which never got in the way, by the way.
Okay.
But he does, because he's a different creative soul.
Sure.
But he broke that all the way down. It was, and that made it real smooth. Makes it easier for me.
So it was a relief, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. How fast of an artist are you?
I do a page a day, dude.
Okay.
That's enough. That's like 6 hours.
Sure.
If I got to crank it, turn up the juice to do a page and a half or two a day, I'll do it. But it's enough for me. I run errands later in the day every day, and, you know, I'm on a time clock and get things done. If I don't get this page done during my day hours, I'll come back and work on it at night.
You got music in the background? What are you, or are you just concentrating on
the
work?
Talk radio, dude.
Talk radio, okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Politics.
Really? All right, there you go.
It used to be Jim Rome, but I let it go, you know. Especially the world of sports. Who the hell, you know, Barry Bonds with the juice?
How about that?
Come on, man.
It's ridiculous.
I got juice for him to drink. It comes in a bottle.
Well, yeah, no kidding. It's sad. It really is sad. And I don't know what they're going to do with that. Because, I think you pull the Band-Aid off of that thing. There's more pus there than they really want to get with. It's not just Barry Bonds. And, I mean, it's not just going to be his records that they're going to have to throw away if they decide to do the right thing, which
right.
I think they should do.
Right.
And I know you're a baseball guy, so you must be a huge Indians fan.
I keep abreast of what they're up to.
Okay.
They always break my heart, like the same with the Browns. I like the underdogs. I like the Seattle because I live in the Northwest. Like everybody in Portland, for the most part, hates Seattle teams. If you go to the bars, it's really a mix. You got the Cleveland Browns bar and the Oakland Raiders bar and the 49ers bar, because it's fragmented. We're like isolated between the big city of Seattle and San Francisco. But this time I was like really happy for the Seahawks getting in there.
Were you a boxer?
How about you?
Well, I'm a Chicago guy, so I'm actually a Cub fan. I know we talked about the White Sox in New York when we met and stuff, and I'm happy for the Sox. But I'm like you, man. I'm an underdog guy, and I was always a Cub fan. Although I get kind of frustrated. I'm not, I'm a wait till next year guy. But after a while, you kind of, the broom up your rear gets a little uncomfortable after a while, and you're like, all right, let's win. Come on.
Exactly.
And especially after that Bartman thing a couple of years ago. Forget about it.
Oh, forget about that.
That was ridiculous. Now, you're a Youngstown guy, and I'm a big boxing fan. So
yeah.
So tell me about Boo Boo Mancini.
I don't know. You went to Hollywood, and we never heard another word.
How about Harry Arroyo? You remember him?
Yeah.
Lightweight? He came to Chicago a couple of times. I saw him fight here a couple of times.
Okay. You know, Ernie Shavers came out of Youngstown.
Oh, I forgot about Ernie Shavers being from Youngstown, of course.
Dave Dravecki and Bernie Kosar. Out of a 100-mile radius of Youngstown, this was a real big, this real blue-collar kind of vicinity, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Youngstown.
Sure, sure.
Joe Montana. This is within a 100-mile radius. Joe Montana, Joe Namath, Tony Dorsett, Mike Ditka, Paul Warfield. They all came out of that area.
No, I'm hip.
I take football serious, man. It's a religion. And that great left fielder, Frank Miller.
Are you saying the artist Frank Miller?
Yeah, baby.
I didn't know he played ball. That's cool.
Sure he did.
That's really cool. Did you ever play sports?
Yeah, Little League.
Oh, there you go.
No, man, he managed the team. We won the championship.
Beautiful.
Yeah, he was a Triple-A pitcher, man, with the St. Louis Browns. I still have the contract.
That's really cool. Wow.
Yeah.
So it was in Youngstown? Where was the...
St. Louis, yeah, in Youngstown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was a really, very athletic guy.
That's really neat.
Really, he loved golf. He was passionate. He died a year ago, and he was still playing golf. He had a hole-in-one a couple years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
He was one of these guys, John, if you hung around with athletes, how these guys moved their hands, moved objects in their hands, they could throw things and hit things with them. He was like that, like a clock on a wall from 20 feet away and say, watch this, with a balled up piece of paper and hit that damn thing. Had that eye.
I thought it was interesting reading that you stayed away from practicing martial arts yourself because you were afraid that you might break something and it might screw up your art career.
Absolutely. I made no bones about that. You call me puss.
I wouldn't call you a puss, man. That's all right. No way.
It's my bread and butter, man.
So what do you got coming up?
I got this. I wrap up. I got two issues of JSA Classified. This is a big thing with the Vandal Savage.
Who's writing that?
Stuart Moore.
Great writer.
Yeah. It's all about this vendetta that the Savage has with the Green Lantern.
Alan Scott.
Right.
Very cool.
We got the other players in there, too, the old Golden Age people.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is this your first time really dealing with the Golden Age DC characters?
Yeah.
So that's got to be fun.
It is fun. We got, let me see what we got. We got the Hawkman in there, Dr. Midnight, The Flash, Johnny Thunder, Green Lantern, Adam, Wonder Woman.
Is it the Golden Age, Adam?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then this takes place in the 40s? Or I guess does it take place?
The script flashes back and forth.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
And how many issues is the whole story?
It's a 4-issue miniseries. And then the Jonah Hex, and then we see what's cooking at Marvel.
With Civil War. Hey, and I should mention your book from Vanguard that celebrates your art. That's a really cool collection as well of your stuff.
Thank you.
How did David approach you, David Spurlock over at Vanguard? Did he approach you about that?
Yeah, it was a phone call, I believe, from David about 2 years ago. And he mentioned it. And then I saw him at a convention. We talked a little more thoroughly about it. And then we got Mike Cronenberg. I think it was Mike. Mike is the guy who really made this thing pop.
I see.
The art director. So I'm real happy with it. It's pretty much what I had in mind. It's great.
Did you empty out the storeroom of all your stuff and everything?
We have enough art that we could do one more.
Oh, that's terrific.
And I'll throw in like 10 new pieces. We're talking about that. And it's not going to be a heavy book like that. It'll be a smaller book, probably in a soft bond. And, another book would be great, man.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah, because there was a lot of stuff that didn't get covered, like Slash Maraud art and other obscure characters. The covers and so forth didn't make it in.
Do you own those characters? Do you own,
Slash Maraud is back in the day when Warner Brothers has that property. I don't think we could wrestle that away.
Okay.
Like Vertigo with Sci Spy, we do own that.
You know, if there's any way to get you and Doug back on James Bond, put me down for another turn at that, man.
There you go.
Because I love that. I thought that was just great. Serpent's Tooth was fantastic.
Thank you.
Did you go back and look at any of the Daily Express comic strip stuff of Bond?
Yeah, I did.
I'm a big fan of that. And, Titan is reprinting a bunch of those. Bond is a great character for comic books, and it always surprises me that more people aren't turning to that.
Me too. I'm surprised as well, John.
Yeah.
But those comic strips were terrific. That style that guy had was wonderful.
Yeah, John McCluskey.
Oh, man, he was terrific.
I almost wonder if they cast Connery because of the look in the comic strips, because that was 5 years before Dr. No even came out as a film.
Ain't that the truth? I'm with you. That look was perfect.
You bet.
I think that's the squabble a lot of the Bond fans have with this new guy coming in.
What do you think of Daniel Craig? Actually, I think he's going to be all right.
I'm not sure. I'm not convinced.
I think it has more to do with the script and the directing than it does the guy.
I know I have a friend of mine who works for the Sony Corporation.
Okay.
Who puts together, he's a... the top guy in the DVD section, he deals with directors and so forth as far as special features and commentary and all that. And he went over to England on the sets. And there's only, like, according to him, 5 action fight scenes.
In the whole
film? Like fisticuffs.
Wow.
So there you go. There's no jetpacking away and all that.
No gadgets, yeah.
No ninjas coming through the ceiling. Apparently. But you got, you know, it's, I don't know. Bond is, it's precarious with the direction it's taken. I've always felt that it should lean towards the fantastic, in my opinion.
What'd you think?
Don't
of
play it so straight up as the Fleming novels. They already tried that, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah, I
you can't do that when you got a great Bruce Willis movie or someone else doing an action movie that's comparable or better than these Bond movies.
Did you like the last few Pierce movies?
Yeah, but I don't know if they hold up to any other action movie. It was a special thing when Bond came out. There's a uniqueness, a quality, the whole visual aspect. But you could have another movie coming out in the summer that's comparable to any Bond with a better storyline. Maybe it's rated R, and you got a more sophisticated audience that could enjoy that more than,
sure.
than where they're tiptoeing around with Bond.
I think you're right, and I think The Matrix was a step in the right direction when they said, no, these have to be ours.
Right.
And I was hoping that, you know, yeah, Hollywood finally understood that, you know, you can have a big popcorn rated R movie and still make a couple hundred million dollars and finally do the things that you need to do to justify the action and get that level of violence that, you know, I think people want.
Exactly. Especially with the visuals of that that trilogy.
Sure.
It's a tough challenge for anybody who tries to do Bond. To come up to that and to match that?
Definitely.
That's tough. When you take a novel like Casino Royale, which is quite violent if you ever read the Fleming novel.
I have, yes.
We got to see what this guy does.
Well, yeah, are they willing to go as far as they do in the book in terms of the torture scenes and things
exactly.
like that? No, I'm with you.
And Live and Let Die also was very violent and totally different than that movie.
Yes.
And what's disappointing is they can't, I don't know if they can possibly ever go back and remake these films.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's kosher.
Yeah, I don't know either. It depends, I guess, on their agreement with the Fleming estate.
Right.
Do you have you done a lot of Hollywood work yourself?
No.
That's really interesting, man.
Yeah. I'm waiting. I'm in line.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell they're waiting for, man.
I'm nosing around. I got projects in Hollywood.
Well, that's cool because, yeah. My God, your style, you know, I mean, if Jeff Darrow's out there, and don't get me wrong, I'm a huge Jeff Darrow fan, and a lot of the comic book guys that are doing Hollywood work, but your cinematic style, my God. Dude, I wish I had a couple mil. I'd hire you now. Let's go.
Let's do it.
What crime films are interesting you these days?
No.
Okay.
Not that come to mind.
Okay.
What last action movie did you love?
Well, you know, I'll say rather than action movies, I'll say crime movies. I love that British movie, Layer Cake.
I didn't see it.
With Daniel Craig. And actually, you know what was great?
Oh, yeah, okay, with the strippers and... Was that with Julie Roberts? Julie Roberts?
No, it was Daniel Craig.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And Michael Gambon.
Yeah.
And it's just a British crime flick. It starts off in, like, Amsterdam, and it's all East End and London stuff.
I got to see that.
Really good. Really,
I walk
really
by it every time in the Blockbuster.
If you see that, and also, I thought Munich was really hardcore, and I was stunned at how hardcore Spielberg does that. You know, every now and then you'll have a film, and you think, all right, he's a wuss, and there's this usual sentimental, syrupy stuff. But then he kind of drops the bottom out, and I thought Munich was just a hardcore revenge movie. It was like The Godfather with a little bit more drama and a little bit more history involved, I guess, with the Mossad and everything. But I was blown away with how good it was.
I got to see it.
I thought it was excellent.
I get so disillusioned with the real events in the world, John.
Sure.
That's like, do I got to deal with the Palestinian thing? No, you know, I went to Jerusalem about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And visited a Palestinian clinic. It was a drug outpatient clinic.
Okay.
And I befriended these Palestinians. I was at their homes and ate with them and danced and sang songs. And my heart went out to these people. But it's so difficult to stay on top of this thing. But, you know, I tell you what, these two guys that run this thing, them being Muslims, they don't practice birth control.
Okay.
So while we're doing this, killing ourselves, these two pieces that are in that book of Moses and Mother Teresa were these fundraising pieces of art that I did to raise money for this clinic. But when they squeeze off like 6-7 children, that's going to eat up a lot of dough, I just got disillusioned with that.
Okay.
And pulled away from the whole thing. That it's so such a mess over there.
Oh, there's no question.
That you know, I kind of wasn't ready for I will see that movie, but I got to be in the frame of mind.
I was stunned with how hardcore it is in
yeah.
terms of just being this very kind of cold revenge movie.
And I became one of these like complacent people that bought the surround sound system, the big screen TV.
Sure.
And would rather cool out in my crib.
Oh, I understand. Well, you know, that's where the movie business is going now anyway.
Absolutely.
They're talking about releasing more independent films simultaneously on pay-per-view and in the theaters for people like yourself. That yeah, exactly. I don't blame you.
There was an article this guy wrote. His name was David Goldstein out of the L.A. Times about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he just pointed out all these factors where Hollywood is shaking in their shoes about all this.
Oh, yeah.
Because these new cinemas, these state-of-the-art cinemas, aren't making money. It's not going to do anybody any good. Because they make their money off the concession stand.
Certainly.
You know. And they can't... The core audience, apparently, is the 15 to 20-year-old male.
Uh-huh.
And this is the guy, this is the kid walking down the street with his cell phone to his ear and iPod thing and BlackBerry, whatever, and playing the video games. And they're not plunking down that $8.50 or $10 to see the movie.
Paul, I appreciate your time today. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. It was a great interview, man.
All right, John, it's been a pleasure, man. Thank you, my friend. Let's do it again.
That's Paul Galassi. His art book, Spies, Vixens, and Masters of Kung Fu, is available through Vanguard Publishing. Check the store racks for that Marvel Punisher Valentine Day one-shot, and be on the lookout for Paul's JSA Classified and Jonah Hex runs coming up at DC. And you can visit Paul's website, too, at galassi.com. That'll do it for this edition of WordBalloon.com. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Make sure you keep coming back to WordBalloon.com for updates on upcoming episodes. WordBalloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2006.